implement that for you, Sheriff.
Call to order council meeting for March the 11th. If everyone would stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Remain standing for prayer.
Dear Lord, bless the decisions of this body, guide us tonight and the future as well. Amen.
Can we have a roll call?
Wayne Chapman.
Here.
Dan Marlett.
Here.
Scott Brown.
Here.
Brian Bell.
Here.
Shirley Rowe.
Here.
Ben Salter.
Here.
Mary Elton.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Grove to adopt the agenda as presented.
Question.
Wayne Chapman.
Yes.
Dan Marlett.
Yes.
Lisa Booth.
Yes.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Brian Bell.
Yes.
Shirley Rowe.
Yes.
Ben Salter.
Yes.
And the agenda is adopted by a vote of 7-0. Need approval of the February 25th minutes.
Now, Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the minutes.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Vice President Ravelette to approve the minutes as presented.
Question?
Wayne Chapman.
Yes.
Dan Marlett.
Yes.
Lisa Booth.
Yes.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Brian Bell.
Yes.
Shirley Rowe.
Yes.
Ben Salter.
Yes.
And they are approved by a vote of 7-0. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances.
Mr. Mayor, I'd note that tomorrow evening at 6:30 is the homeless summit that's been organized by the United Way of Knox County, and encourage members to attend if possible, and certainly encourage the public to attend as well. It's at the First Baptist Church Conference Center.
Okay, anything else? Not committee chair reports. And then we'll move on to report of city officers. And at this time, I'm going to introduce Brandon with Reedy Financial to present this evening.
Hi guys, Brandon Robbins, Reedy Financial Group. Mayor asked us to be here tonight to kind of go before the state of the city this evening that he's going to be doing a little bit later, kind of talk about our 2019 planning, as well as kind of where we ended the year in 18, and some of the stuff that I actually added to this presentation for you guys as we get into it. It's going to kind of give you a little bit of a glimpse at what the city has to deal with budgeting-wise and planning-wise as we move forward. So if we want to jump into it on the agenda, what we've got is some historical relevance, things that have impacted the city, the actions the city took to weather the storm, as I would call it, proactively planning for the future, or the creation of the long-term operational and capital improvement plan. Some of you guys have seen it. It's a lot more detailed than what you're looking at tonight. Definitely a couple hundred pages probably, but it does a real good job of setting goals and policies and things like that to make sure that the city stays on the right track and manages the things that they have to face each year. So what have we achieved in that? And then looking forward as to where we're heading. And I'm going to try to stay pretty consistent here. Get through this. There's quite a few slides. I don't want to take up a bunch of your time tonight. Definitely a lot of good information. Stop me if you have any questions, because it's all about education. I want to make sure we answer anything that comes up. So, historical relevance. Some things that happened in the past that really affected the city, not only the city of Vincennes, but the entire state and every municipality within the state. Probably around 2003, market value adjustment was introduced. It changed from replacement cost to market value. The reason why I'm telling you this is because when that happened, there were significant assessed value drops that fell on the homeowners. It actually increased homeowners significantly. and it caused tax rates to go through the roof. And because of that, what happened was supplemental deductions were implemented, standard deductions were increased, and then the circuit breaker, which a lot of us know from the city perspective as a negative. You know, for what it is for the taxpayers, it's fantastic. It's a cap for the taxpayers. It's something that certainly helps them and prevents them from paying too much with higher tax rates and higher tax environments. But ultimately, for a municipality, what it does is it takes away from your actual levy collections each year. So as we look into the next couple of pages, you're gonna really see the implications of that. And then we had the recession in 08 and 09. So this is all in the last 10 years. And what the recession did is actually affected income taxes pretty substantially. So as we look at it at its worst, similar to many of the municipalities in the state, Vincennes experienced assessed value drop and income tax drop, and primarily due to these topics that I just outlined. But the city was really hit hard by the circuit breaker credits and what happened in that environment. So it caused millions of dollars of property tax revenue loss, strained funding for the essential services and a lot of the capital projects, and ultimately budget complications. And it really, the state at that point in time never gave us the tools over 10 years ago to come out and say, here's what we think your circuit breakers are gonna be, here's what we think your loss is gonna be. So when you guys are hit by a significant environment of a levy loss, and what you're gonna see on this next tab, it makes it extremely hard to manage, makes it extremely hard to budget. So that's something that I wanted you guys to see before we get into where we're at now, because this next slide, what it actually shows you is in the orange and the blue combined is what your levy collections otherwise would have been if you collected 100% of it. This is actually a snapshot of the entire 9-year period the circuit breaker has existed. So you guys, the crazy thing about this is you kind of average around a 30% collection loss. So what this shows you is the total orange and blue together would be what you would otherwise collect if you collected 100% of it. The orange is what you actually collect on your tax levies for all your tax levy funds. And the blue is your loss due to circuit breaker. It's what you do not collect. It's that cap that every single person, for the most part, in the community sees on their tax bill. They just simply don't pay it. So what that equates to is if you were to expect to budget 100% of your tax levy, you're only collecting 70% of that. So it's a significant budget constraint. And over a 9-year period, it ends up being around $22 million that you just simply did not collect in tax levy. So how do you manage that? You know, so that's some of the historical relevance that's just not gonna go away. It's gonna continue. And as you can see, even in 18, it was up over 30%. So moving forward, the biggest hurdle for planning, what this does, what the circuit breaker does, is it artificially forces your budgets to be, and in the past and all the way in the future, to have unused appropriations, to burn down cash, to do things because planning doesn't, you know, without planning, there was no tool in place that allowed you guys to plan for a budget that had 30% of the tax revenue loss. So in this case, you see that around 10 to 12% for all tax funds, which is the note here, and we exclude debt and pension funds, so because debt funds are protected, but the combined total is pretty high. Now, unused appropriations are good. They're good to have because nobody ever spends 100% of their budget, but ultimately, they need to get down to about a healthier level that we can anticipate each year on having. And that's what we're doing. That's what the plan that the city has in place right now is doing. The circuit breaker complicates the budget process, often leading to the overestimate of budgets, which is what those percentages reflect. So as we jump forward, what I would say on this, I would also hit this note here in the future. We're fine-tuning the financial plan to bring it down to a sustainable level. And guys, like I said, the way that it's printed is a little bit different than the way it looks on the slideshow. So just bear with me on that. I wanted to make sure I got as many notes in your guys' report as possible. So really, what did we do to weather the storm? We started proactively planning for the future. We created a long-term operational capital improvement plan, and it's really a tool that helps to make informed decisions for the decision makers of the entire city. It helps you guys to set goals, see what the outcomes are gonna be before they actually are unfolding, actually happening. And then it helps you to take full advantage of fund flexibility. You have many funds within a community. that can be used on many different purposes, but many of them, like the general fund, can't be used on just everything. So the concept there is to allocate funds, to allocate projects, to allocate capital, whatever it is that you need, to specific funds that can actually fund it. So that's the concept of fund flexibility, and that's what we've done with the capital plan. Within the financial plan, in the entire plan for the city, this little kind of graph depiction here, the financial plan in the top right green, that's kind of your 30,000 foot picture. That's gives you your cash goals, your unused appropriation goals, your budget for the future, your actual data for the past. What that does is allows us to plan for capital. Where can we put capital projects? Where can we move into the future? And where can we start building the city up, doing more economic development, things that the city needs? That stuff seamlessly integrates right into your budget. And that's what the budget book is. The budget book's a tool, and I'm going to show you guys this stuff here in just a minute, but it's a tool that essentially allows you guys to plan better during the budget process. And it's something that falls right into the state forms as well. So it makes it a lot more easy to manage that process as well, which then leads to the management report. That's how you manage the whole process. You can go in and look at a line item detail. That line item detail then feeds back to the financial plan. So it's a neat little circle that works off of each other, that as a team, you know, the city has developed and continues to develop. It's a living, breathing document that allows you guys to help make those good informed decisions. So, well, let's talk about the major sources of revenue. There are two specific sources of revenue that are far above any other within the city. The tax funds, property taxes, and I'll go through what types of funds in particular, and then income tax, which is your second primary source. First of all, tax funds, maximum levy funds. These are your significant operational funds. For the most part, this includes your general fund, your park fund, your pension fund. You're going to see a pie chart here in just a sec, and your fire fund. And these really just kind of operate your city, but what it is a pool of money that each year the taxes go into, and it grows by this six-year non-farm growth quotient. And that this year for 2019 is only 3.4%. So last year it was 4%. It ebbs and flows. It's a state number. It's not something, if Knox County and the city of Vincennes is doing better than the state average, it doesn't matter. We get what the state is. So the problem with it is we're only growing at an inflationary rate, but our expenses are exceeding that every year. So how do we plan for it? So that's again where the fund flexibility concept comes in. So growth of the max property tax levies, you can see kind of the trend where it's been. Obviously, it's going to grow each year. There is a point right there where it declined. That's because we had an appeal the prior year, and the way the formula works is it backs out next year. So you can kind of see that little jump there. But moving forward, that's kind of the trend we anticipate seeing. And I think that's kind of an average of that 3.4 each year. Should be pretty consistent. And then the next little chart is the pie chart you guys have. That is where your actual 2019 dollars for the maximum levy funds are going. And those amounts exactly, that's straight from the state. So primarily general fund and fire fund, as you can see. So that's your significant operational funds. Then you have what are called rate-driven funds, which is your cumulative capital development fund. And the CUMCAP development fund is directly related to what AV does, so your assessed value. You guys have pretty decent assessed value right now that's continuously, you know, growing in the right path. That's what I mean by the decent aspect. Vincennes, for as big as you guys are, I mean, the AVs are not as substantial as maybe another 17 to 20,000 person city. But that's also why you see the circuit breakers you do. That's why we have to manage the process and plan the way we do. But the good thing is the trend has continuously been up. And how do we fix that? It's tough to do. Since the tax caps came in, there's a lot of things that, you know, economic development's the key, continuing to bring AV into our community and things like that. But the point of the rate-driven fund is the state caps you at a max rate, which in this CUMCAP development fund is 5 cents. That rate cannot go above that 5 cents. So it's inversely related to what assessed value does. So if your assessed value climbs, then that rate's going to come down and the state's going to keep that tax levy you collect right at the same number until you reestablish as a council. So that's what this little graph is depicting here. The point of it is to bring light to the fact that, you know, as AVs grow, and we have been seeing an AV trend going up, That rate's going to continue to drop, and at some point, it's good to consider kind of reestablishing back to where it was. The concept of this fund is to fund capital, and it's a big, big player in our capital improvement plan. So the last type of fund are debt funds. These funds essentially get what they need to fund the debt obligation. It kind of is what it is. The state, they protect them. The circuit breaker does not hit these the same way it does other funds. And they're actually subject, for the most part, they're subject to a 2% constitutional debt limit. Your guys' current debt limit based on your AV is 2.9 million roughly. And you currently have right around 2.5, 2.6 million in the Series A, Series B bonds of 2016. Those were for capital. Those were police, fire, parks, things like that were inside of there. I don't have the detailed list in here, but they're an integral part of what we're funding our capital with as well. So building corporation lease rentals are outside of that debt limit. You don't have any of those in the city, but just as a reference from a debt fund perspective, those are outside of that number. The point of this is to just highlight the fact that planning is extremely necessary to identify the opportunities in any new debt without creating tax rate swings. You don't want the ebbs and flows of tax rates. Even if in the circumstances you guys face with a 30%+ circuit breaker, your taxpayers don't see it, they don't feel it, none of that happens because most of them are capped. But what happens is we have to manage the circuit breaker even heavier if we do have a lot of ebbs and flows in the tax rate. So it's good to always continuously try to manage that, monitor that, and make sure we stay consistent there. So those are the debt funds. Those are the three basic, most important types of funds. And then your second major source of revenue is income tax. There's no close third. Property tax and income tax are really the big subsidy of the entire city for operations and capital. And the two in the pie chart that you see are in the blue, certified shares, which certified shares go straight into your general fund. And it actually, for the most part, subsidizes the income tax burden you guys face, the circuit breaker burden you guys face. And it also funds your operations. So specific to general fund, specific to operations, that's where all your departments are, for the most part, planted. It is a 0.6% rate. Then on top of that, you also have to equal out a total of 1% for your entire county income tax rate, economic development income tax. That's a 0.4% rate. This fund really heavily funds a lot of the capital in the capital improvement plan for the city. So it really has a lot of just variety of what it funds, but several capital improvement projects designed to enhance the quality of life or improve service levels. So it also helps fund a lot of the public safety needs we have as well. So those are your specific types of income tax that you currently have in place. And then I just want to show you guys where we stacked up statewide. I think it's always good to see representation of every county. And again, income tax is pretty well driven county to county. But on the far left, there's five right there. I think you guys have the orange highlights, but those are the top five highest income tax rates in the entire state. Obviously, you guys aren't even close to that. On the far right are the bottom five, and then right in the middle, you see there's about nine, I believe, in that color, eight or nine. Vincennes is number 81 out of 92 counties. So you're in the bottom 10 as far as that goes. But just to note, there's nine other counties with 1%. So pretty much in the lower part, but that's kind of where you guys stack up as a county as a whole. And just want to make sure you guys have that information moving forward for the financial plan. So we know the major four sources of revenue. Now what? We put it into a financial plan. The financial plan, it helps us to make the good informed decisions. And what we end up doing is we grab the financial data, we organize it, we put it into the plan. We meet with the folks, the mayor, the clerk treasurer, the council. I mean everybody to come up with those goals, those long term needs. And department heads will bring in their capital needs and their budget each year. And then we'll implement those goals through a plan. And I'm gonna real quickly kind of show you what some of the snippets from the plan look like. The next two pages are your general fund, straight from the plan at year end. So the first page here is your revenues. And what you guys see on the left side are three actual data years. So these are all actual numbers. You can look on your annual report and see these as well. In the middle, you see the budget 18, which is now actual. So this is all to the middle, to the left is actual. Normally what you're gonna see is where you're at in the budget here in the middle. And then on the right, you have projected information. That's where the metal meets the meat. That's your tool right there, because you can sit here, you can look at that, sorry, and you can see right off the cuff, this first point I'm gonna make in green, that the circuit breaker is taking $2.2 million right out of your general fund tax levy. If you didn't know that, if you didn't plan for that, and you didn't have that revenue notice, the 6.7 total to plan for your budget, you'd be planning on $2.2 million more in your budget, and then you would have to react to when the state cuts your budget. So for the plan that's been in place for the last few years, you'll see here in just a minute the cash reserves are kind of following the plan that's in place to ensure that we're moving in the right direction, even though you guys are facing significant burdens like this. 30% of your tax revenue is not collected because of the caps. Again, that is a state statute that has nothing to do with really anything outside of that came in 2009. There's not a whole lot you can do about it unless you were just cut rates, which you can do because you got to provide essential services for the city. So the other point I'd make here is you're going to see information on here that from 2017 to 2018 we had nice revenue growth, and we also plan on healthy revenue growth in the future based on the financial plan as a whole. So then on the second page you jump to the expenditure side, and what this shows you in the top part is you see the actual 19 budget, and then you see future projected years. This information is really good for you guys to be able to sit here and be proactive in your budgeting, to know right when you walk into the budgeting process that you have a funded budget at this level, and you gotta get to that level so that you know you get it approved, so you're not reacting to those budget cuts, like I said earlier. So the other great part on this is we're gonna highlight those unused appropriations. And as you can see in yellow, kind of the percentages in the middle of the page, those are being brought down to kind of a, like I said, the healthier level. We're putting those into a position that if you get more than that, if you get 6%, 7%, 8%, great. That helps your cash reserve, that helps your balance. But you're not over budgeting because of things like the circuit breaker. The other thing is in the bold, the second row from the bottom, you can see the cash progression. This is to try and get you guys to meet those cash reserve goals and get you to continue in the right direction. So it's a great, great tool that you guys use right now to make sure that your budgets are funded and balanced. And you're gonna see that part here in just a second as well. But then we also put capital improvement spending and things that ensure that you guys are not gonna just have to go in and put a number and not have any sort of plan in place that ensures that you're not burning up all the cash in the fund or something like that for a significant capital project. So that leads right into the capital improvement plan. This colorful summary right here. This is, and I'll point this out again, I don't know that I've said it, but this entire thing is a living, breathing document. I mean, it is fluid, it changes each year. Needs change, costs change, things like that, but it allows you to be proactively just changing on the fly. You don't have to go in and redo this thing every time you gotta come in. You just plug a new number in and you're good to go. So what this does is it allows you to have a summary of your spending needs, your capital funding needs on the top. Every department head has put in these requests. They've worked with the mayor, the clerk treasurer, probably the council as well. And then those funding needs are matched up to funding sources on the bottom part, and they're actually color coordinated. So if you were to match up a color in the funding needs section, you might see two or three colors in the where it's funded from portion on the bottom. That all translates right back to your financial plan. So great tool for not only just knowing where your capital is coming from, but also for budgeting. So this translates to the budget, like I said earlier. So ultimately, the city has, we showed 17, but over a five-year period, over $10 million in capital projects that have been funded, and they've all been funded without sacrificing essential services, without burning up too much cash flow to do any of it. And all your operational capital improvement funds have been balanced throughout that whole process and surplusing. So it's been a great, great action plan. It's been moving forward in the right direction. And like I said, it's a fluid document. We're working right now with department heads to get 2022 projections incorporated into this plan. So the next slide. So bringing the city's plan to life. What do? We do budgeting. So this thing, we just talked about the financial plan, the capital plan, everything we just went over translates right into this document. It allows you to project your revenues, your cash reserves, your unused appropriations, and then it essentially tells you how can we have a balanced budget before we even start the process. And then from there, it seamlessly integrates into the state's budget forms on Gateway. So it's a great tool. And then I'm going to show you a quick little snippet from the actual budget book. Kind of gives you line items of the budget. This is from last year. But ultimately, the mayor and the council, and what you guys will do is you'll use this thing to make those decisions, to know where you need to be. And you'll see the data on the left that shows you actual data. And then you'll work through where the department requests are and where the needs are, and then you'll come up with your final column on the right. And then from there, it'll go right into the state's forms, and you should have no problems with the state at that point. So, and then the other thing is, the informed decisions, the city proactively prepares balanced budgets. So through those informed decisions, you're able to do that. That's what this is depicting right here in the yellow. And ultimately, you started with a higher request than what you could afford or fund based on the financial plan, and you ended with a result that matches your financial plan. So that protects your cash reserves. So moving on forward, getting through that little education piece, so with the plan and goals in place, what do we achieve? Kind of my little picture thing here. You got the storm, you weathered it, and now you got the green grass on the other side. So what we're doing in the city, it's stuff that you got to sit here and say, yeah, this financial plan's great. It's a tool that makes us more efficient, sure, but what are we really seeing? And this is what's kind of neat about it. So achievements, the assessed value growth, what does that do for us? Well, stable growth in assessed value could allow for the funding of daily operations and capital, lower tax rates, meaning a reduction for you guys in circuit breaker impacts, which would be fantastic. And it shows signs of economic growth spurring off further AV growth. That's the key. That's how we get our rates down. Provides opportunities for rate reestablishment, like we talked about earlier in the slides. Provides a means for cash reserve growth. That's the key. I mean, we got to get to a point, you're going to see this here in just a second, to where cash reserves are something, we're right there. This city is very close to that. But there's something that we're not always worried about, burning up cash to do projects, to do things that are essential for the city. So one thing I liked about this graph was for the last 4 years, you've had a steady trend in assessed value upwards. Normally, most cities are going to only have one AV line. You guys have three. The civil one in blue is the most significant one. That's what drives your max levy funds. That drives your rate funds and most of your debt funds. The orange one is your referendum debt for park debt, and your fire is due to the fire protection district. So it's a great graph to show you that we're moving in the right direction. Slowly but surely, you can always see good things when you see AV go up. So how close is the city to its cash reserve goals? I mentioned this earlier. What this graph depicts for you is in orange, each year where we ended with our significant funds, our major operating and capital funds, not including debt. Where did we end the year, and how close are we to that blue line, which is our target? Now, what I will tell you is the target, and what we like to do is break it down by days. So if you look at 18 and we focus on 18, you're at 166 days in cash reserves. What does that mean? That means that if we shut the revenue stream off, we didn't collect any revenue, the city could operate and fund its capital for 166 days. That's actually fantastic. The goal for me, for any time I'm working with my clients, these property tax related funds, they go 6 months without their major source of revenue, which is property taxes. That's why I have this little note with the 6 months and 180 days in cash reserves. The concept there is at some point, your books, your funds, if you don't have the reserves in place, you're gonna see those go in the red. You're gonna see those go negative. You're gonna see trends that, and then you gotta wait till the property taxes come in to see those go back in the black. At 180 days, you don't have that problem. You have good cash flow, you have good sustainable fund balances, and the State Board of Accounts isn't gonna come knocking and giving you a hard time. So really important to note that, and right now the plan has us getting there almost by 2020, and likely, with some of the conservative projections and revenues and things like that, we can get there even quicker. So, So one thing I'll tell you, stacking up to a lot of other communities that we work with, that we see, that we look at, we monitor, you got to be put in the category of other counties and cities and communities that have significant circuit breaker burdens. You know, you're at 30%+. That's a lot. That is a big circuit breaker. I've seen some a lot higher, but none of which are in a cash position like this. And that's something that I think, I know the mayor takes pride in that, and we always plan with that as the back end goal. How do we fund our capital? How do we fund our operations? How do we do these things without decreasing our cash balances and putting ourselves at risk? A lot of units of government I work for, when I come in, I mean, they're like less than 30 days. I mean, it's not great. So we try to build these plans and we try to make that stuff work, but the trend here is showing that it is working. So I wanted to point that out. It's just a fantastic cash reserve balance right now, even at the end of 18. And moving forward, 2021, you should be right there at that goal. So now I want to talk about, real quickly, the capital plan. So the capital plan in action. So you guys have built a great capital improvement strategy. And it's allowed the city to continue to usher in economic development while maintaining and improving service levels. And I wanted to highlight some of the major projects that we see inside of the capital improvement plan. Now these bold points, there are many, many different line items in the city, but they're categorized in a way that lets you guys really, really tangibly see what it is that these amounts are being spent on. So securing ongoing grants and projects and things like that is really important because you're utilizing every revenue source. You're going out there and you're trying to find funding by matching. And anytime you can get that, I mean, whether it's free money or not, you might get a 50-50 grant. You might get a 20-80 grant. You put the money up, they give it to you. Too many communities don't do enough of that. But then also at the state side, we don't always have those opportunities. But we do here. We've been doing it here, and that's a big part of your capital plan. Technology and IT improvements. Every single department has these technology and IT needs. That's all a part of the cap plan. So the infrastructure improvements and even the equipment that's funded through the actual project, you do your paving, you do the equipment, you do all that stuff in here. For these infrastructure improvements. Youth sports is another big one in there. So Vince Inns has an exceptional parks program, and you guys, I know, even hosted the Little League World Series this year. You have a great ballpark out there. And I know the youth sports is that's just one component of it. I know the mayor will probably talk a lot more about these in detail later on, but the public safety, that's one of the most expensive requirements for every unit of government that I work with, and I'm sure in the state of Indiana. The problem you see, and you got to fund public safety, but equipment and supplies and even in the paving and infrastructure side, this stuff is not getting cheaper. So the city is trying to fund this through that 3.4% growth quotient, whatever rates you guys have in place, whatever income taxes you collect, and it's really challenging to do that. So that's why it's pretty imperative that we show that we're able to do a lot of that. KCDC, that's the Knox County Development Corp, countywide organization that promotes economic development. So that's supported by the local businesses, educators, and local leaders. Really important that we invest back in that to get our economic development plan in place. The Pantheon Theater, I think that was done last year. It's a joint effort between the county and the city to convert the theater into a space for local entrepreneurship. May still be going on. I'm not sure if it is or not, but I know you got more on that. Business incentives, we do have that built into our capital plan to build relationships with local businesses and community. So big picture, as we look at it in a pie chart, you can kind of see those same things broken down by dollar amounts and each segment of them. The infrastructure and equipment is obviously huge, and public safety is really huge too. So grant matching is a big part of it as well. This is your five-year plan at a glance. And ultimately, the point of this is you fully funded a capital improvement plan over a five-year period of over $10 million. So this will continue to provide many improvements to the city while still allowing other operational and financial goals to be met. Really, really awesome, awesome feat that's been done there with that. $10 million is a good amount for a city of this size, for sure. So looking ahead, what's on the horizon as I kind of wrap up here. So with the proper tools in place, Vincent's will have the ability to sustain the assessed value growth. it's very important that we continue to see that either sustain or grow, because it just doesn't happen everywhere. So it's definitely on the right track. Implement and set new goals. Every single year, this plan needs to be updated. It just has to continue to be put into the direction that the city wants it to go, and we'll do everything we can to meet those goals through the constraints of the things like the managing of the circuit breaker, which is that next goal. So push every avenue for revenue opportunities to better grow the city. This is grants. This is just analyzing LID, which is your local income tax, proper debt management, which is the level debt service concept. So again, all of these things just play an integral role of making sure that we're moving in the right direction. So finally, what does it all mean? You guys have a great plan in place. Considering the things that you have faced, and I know I went over some things that were 10 years in the past, but these things have been hitting us for 9 years straight, and the accumulation of over $22 million in tax revenue loss. We've weathered this storm. The team that you have in place right now, I mean, it's just been fantastic. The mayor, the clerk treasurer, council, department heads, and other local leaders. I know when I come down here and I meet with you guys, it's just been awesome to watch this plan unfold. And obviously, since we've looked at some of the things that the moving forward stuff, the cap plan, cash reserves, things like that, you can see it working. The assessed value, you can see it working. So the city's moving in the right direction. You have a great team in place and a great group, and definitely a city that cares. And I think that's probably where I'll finish it, considering it's a kind of redundant, but lots of stuff you've managed, lots of stuff you guys have done, and we're certainly grateful to be a part of it. So, but I want to answer any questions. That's all I've got. Hopefully I got through it fairly quickly. Didn't keep y'all too long.
Brandon, we just finished basketball tourney time, and in Indiana we always compare ourselves to all the great teams, and so based on what I do anecdotally when I turn on television or pick up an out-of-town newspaper and see some of the problems that other communities are having financially, we'll have to name them, but I sometimes see those stories and I'm very grateful that we are not facing those. So mention this when you talk about cash reserve funding the capital development plan. It seems like we have handled it fairly well in terms of getting through the rough spot and developing a plan forward. You don't see anything on the horizon the state's going to monkey with that's going to throw a wrench at us again, do you?
I mean, I definitely watch that stuff very carefully. I think you're. Things like the circuit breaker, they're not going away. And what I would point out is a lot of the things that you're seeing communities struggle with, communities just shutting down, shutting the doors for the most part, having to lay off people, having to do things with their essential services, a lot of that you're going to see in the last 10 years has really been because of things like the circuit breaker tax caps. I know I've got clients now that are still managing to build their workforce back up. I know I read an article whenever this first came out that Muncie had to fire 40 firefighters and 40 police officers, I thought. I mean, it was way back then, but, I guess my point is you guys are managing it very well. I think you have to have a plan in place. I think you have to have something that gets you to the goals or to the opportunities that are out there, because too often cities and towns and counties are saying, no, we just can't simply do it because of this burden we have. So, I mean, you haven't had to do that. Not yet, and hopefully not ever. But you're moving in the right direction. I still say if you continue the cash reserve goals, you get to the 180 days, you're able to, at that point, start using the extra funds and these things for bigger projects, for bigger economic development, help spur off more assessed values. As far as the legislature goes, TIF is always a topic. I know that's not this board. TIF has always been the topic, but we're certainly up to speed and apprised on that. I know Mary Yoakum saw the presentation we did at AIM, but that's something that's always going to be under the gun, I think. Other than that, at this point, I don't see anything too significant that would impact you guys. And if there was, I would definitely be trying to get it in the plan.
And I'm going to mention real quick that they are also the firm that takes care of our RDC.
Yeah, we do work with the RDC as well.
Their projects and their income and everything, the way the money's spent, so.
Of course, you mentioned it earlier, but this is really just kind of a highlight of a much more detailed report that you provide to us.
Yep.
And I mention that because I've had people at budget time that will stop me and say, you know, how come the council's not fighting with the administration like cats and dogs, as if they maybe were watching a television report about another city where they were doing that at budget time. And my answer to that is that, you know, it's because of planning like this that is utilized when the mayor submits his budget to the council.
Right.
All this has been digested into the mayor's budget he submits to council before we ever deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then if all this planning and analysis is put into the budget proposal that comes to council, we as a group really don't have a great deal to argue about. But it's due to this that prevents that. So I just want to point that out.
And I mean, I've talked to the mayor even, but a lot of times we'll even do workshops on the big binder, the one that said it's probably 100 or 200 pages, and we can sit down with you guys and kind of do that as well. So those are a little more time, not usually 20, 30 minutes, but it's all, you know, it's all good information, and you guys, I mean, as a collective whole, the city has done a great job.
And the plan is to do that here in the near future, but that will be a few hours. It won't be a 30-minute presentation.
Of course, you have some projections in here, but basically historical data, just anecdotally, what I see going on around the community in terms of new developments that may not be part of this, I'm thinking of assessed valuation now, I tend to think that this may be a little conservative, so in terms of assessed value, evaluation going forward.
Yeah, you don't want to overproject assessed value or mess your rates and your budget up. So, in fact, the DLGF tells everybody during the budget season to cut it by like 15%. So, just in case there's something unforeseen.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Feel free to reach out if you do have any questions. I do not know how to shut this off.
Uh-uh. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, we will move on to old business. Only thing under old business is the council appointment to the Pantheon Education Center Board of Directors. Real quick, I'll point out that the Roberts Rules of Orders has been brought to my attention, and under making an appointment like this, it isn't like a motion and a second. It's just a nomination. The floor open for nominations. You can nominate as many people as you want, but then when the actual vote's taken, you'll vote for the person that you want to fill that position. And I see the, not Dave Rolligan, but.
Doesn't have a bow tie. That
sounds right to me, though,
man.
Yes. So under discussion, do you want to discuss this? Or do you want to make nominations?
Nominations, it's just that they don't require a second. Right. So I would nominate Dr. Jennifer Pacheco, Art Chair of Business at Vincennes University for this position.
Okay, got one nomination. Are there any other nominations?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Scott Brown.
Okay, any other nominations?
Okay, seeing none, does not require nominations be closed. We just, if there's no more nominations, we know the two nominees, so we would just open the floor for discussion.
Okay. Discussion.
I'm a real big advocate of us going with a city council representative. I kind of laid this out last meeting. Not that anybody else can't do this position, But in more high-profile situations or high-profile boards, ones that we're invested in, it's very key that we have a direct line of communication, somebody that can speak from a council perspective, stand up to the council, and also relay that information directly to us. There's been time in the past where we've had situations with boards, and I'm not saying it's been nefarious, it's just when you don't get that communication, then all of a sudden something's dropped to us, and then we're kind of left out in the dark. And that does look bad that we're not kept in the loop. So having somebody from the council for this position, I feel would be the best route for us to go. Obviously, Councilman Brown is the one who was appointed. I feel anybody would have been great, but we've asked for somebody from the council, and that's the appointment that was made.
I agree. I think if we're going to show that the council is invested in this project, I think we need to have our own voice on there.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Mayor, yes, I would like to defend my nomination of Dr. Jennifer Pacheco for the position. I would point out that according to its bylaws, the purpose of the Pantheon Educational Center is to, quote, advance educational and scientific opportunities and methodologies and fields of study that are underdeveloped but vital to the economic development and livelihood of the local geographic area of southern Indiana, end quote. Based on this purpose, my criteria for our nominee to serve on this board is to seek someone who has both the educational background, since this is an educational center, and a good business background, since it is the objective of this entity to grow and develop businesses through entrepreneurship. I also believe that one of our criteria should be to select someone with a proven track record of working with young people, since this is a prime demographic group that will be targeted for both retention and attraction to our community. Attracting a board member who also has a proven track record of major fundraising to help support such important objectives is, of course, a big asset too. In reviewing Dr. Pacheco's resume, which I have distributed to all council members for their review, I believe you will find that she meets or exceeds all of these criteria. Beyond that, she has committed to communicating with this council and welcomes our views. She's worked with boards, so she understands the importance of that communication avenue. And while I can appreciate some members' opinion that our appointee should be a council member, I can think of no example in which a city ordinance requires a council appointment to various boards, although state statute does in a couple of cases. And since this is a four-year appointment that we are making, and all the council members have opposition in this fall's election, there's no guarantee that any council member selected tonight will even be a member of the council for three out of the four-year term in office on the Pantheon board. Also, I would draw your attention to two facts about other appointments by elected bodies recently. The county commissioners have appointed an agribusiness leader, Dennis Musen, to represent the commissioners. And the county council has selected Harry Nolting, who was a longtime educator and also is the head of Nolting Cattle Company, in addition to, yes, his serving on the county council. So instead of restricting our search to one of our own, I ask council members to instead focus on the criteria for a nominee who can bring the most to the table to ensure the ultimate success of the Pantheon Educational Center Incorporated. I believe that nominee Dr. Jennifer Pacheco does that. And just, I know you've had this resume for some time, but I'll just, I'm not going to read all three pages of it, but just to give you the highlights, she is the department chair of the Department of Business and Management at Vincennes University. She collaboratively works with the faculty there, and I might mention that that department teaches the topic of entrepreneurship, so I think that is relevant. She is also assistant professor of business and management for 8 years, from 2007 to 2015, She was the foundation director of the Good Samaritan Hospital Foundation, which has raised major funds to improve facilities and services of our community's largest employer. Before that time, she had quite a distinguished career at Verizon Corporation, rising to a senior staff consultant for multilingual sales, working over a wide area. But she performed a number of other roles for Verizon, from an entry-level position all the way to leadership in the corporation. She holds a PhD in industrial and organizational psychology. She has an MBA in leadership. She has a business degree in business studies. And her volunteerism in community leadership is exemplary. She's a board member, a president of Life After Meth, a Hope's Voice board member, Knox County Prevent Child Abuse Council, Knox County Chamber of Commerce Ambassador, United Way volunteer. And I won't read all of her professional affiliations as well, but she is very well qualified. She is committed to the mission of the Pantheon Educational Center, and I think would represent the entire community, not just the city council, on this board.
Any other discussion?
Yes. First, Scott, you're going to have to get your resume today. The city and the county both own the Pantheon Theater now, and the Knox County appointed one of their own members to be on this board. So I think it's only fair that someone from the city council is also on this board, and that's why I nominated Scott Brown.
Any other discussion?
There's no further discussion. I would call for the question.
And then on the question, you will answer either Dr. Pacheco or Councilman Brown.
Brown, Brown.
Councilman Brown.
Ken Salters.
Councilman Brown.
Tracy Breeze.
Councilman Brown.
Scott Brown.
Councilman Brown.
Shelley Rose.
Councilman Brown.
Dwayne Chapman.
Dr. Pacheco.
Dan
Arbolin. Councilman Brown.
Okay, with Councilman Brown having 6 votes, he will be the appointment to the Pantheon Education Center Board.
I would like to say that I do plan on leaning on the other council to attend meetings as well. I think this is a mammoth project. There's a lot of we put a lot of time and effort in this, and so I do plan on calling other folks to attend the meeting, so just be waiting on my call.
I think we're fortunate on the council that we do have a very diverse group here. We do have a young educator here on the board. I happen to be a business owner of 2 businesses. We got a lot of knowledge here, so I think working together, it's a good choice.
Okay. If nothing else, we will move on to new business. Lydia Duncan, Community Liaison Knox County Youth Foundation, is going to give a report on the recent Dr. Seuss Day.
First of all, I'd like to start off by saying thank you to Mayor Yoakum, members of Benson City Council, Fire Chief Sunny Pink staff, and members of Benson City Fire Department for your participation in making Dr. Seuss 2019 a greater success than the Knox County Youth Foundation could have imagined. This particular event not only served more than 300 children in Knox County, but families from Evansville and Indianapolis and various places in between came to Knox County to attend this particular event. As a foundation, we have learned that these events, with these events, is that communities greater in population do not have a program similar to ours, a program that provides free interactive learning experiences. Vincennes, Knox County has been very fortunate to have many firsts. Vincennes was the first capital of the state, the first university, the first county fair, and we now have another first at the Knox County Foundation. Not only did the children of Knox County benefit from Dr. Seuss 2019, but both the county and the city of Vincennes did as well, with many families that traveled to come see the great things we were doing for the youth of Knox County. We have already partnered up with the Vincennes City Police Department for an Easter event for Easter, and we'll be doing a smaller event on April 13th that will include free photos with the Easter Bunny and fingerprinting for the children. I've briefly spoken to Fire Chief Sonny Pinkstaff. He's checking on his calendar whether or not his department can attend. With each event that the Knox County Youth Foundation provides, it grows in attendance, and more volunteers and sponsors are needed. As a not-for-profit, we are so grateful for the volunteers and sponsors, because today's children are tomorrow's future, and your involvement does make a positive impact on their lives. Thank you again for your support and participation.
Thank you. It was a wonderful event. Everyone thoroughly enjoyed it, with the possible exception of me serving those green eggs. I got a little ill, but the kids like it. They love
kids
the green
like
eggs.
Yeah.
I just had to kind of look past that.
All right.
But it was good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to claims.
No, what is the total? Mr. Mayor, I move we approve claims totaling $534,430.12.
Second.
Got a motion by President Chatton, second by Councilman Brown, to pay the claims in an amount of $534,430.12.
Question.
Dwayne Chatton?
Yes.
Tracy Bruce?
Yes.
Dan Marbury?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Terry Rose?
Yes.
Brian Bell?
Yes.
And the claims are paid by a vote of 7-0. Does anybody have anything under miscellaneous? If not, we need a motion to adjourn. And after we adjourn, we'll take about a 5 or 10 minute break, and then I'll start in with the state of the city.
We'll do adjourn.
Okay, we are adjourned.
You want us to remain here?
Yeah, unless okay. You need to go.
No,
I don't. Restroom facilities.